welcome. Man, it's great to have you here with us on Father's Day. I want to welcome those of you here in the West venue, all those over in the East venue, and those are on our live stream right now. Great to have you with us as well. My name is Mark, if we haven't met. I'm one of the pastors here at C3. And a happy Father's Day. I mean, I would tell you, some of you guys, if you came in just a little bit ago, we have like a bacon bar. If you didn't get any, you can get some after the service, huh? That's awesome. You had me at bacon. And then some of you probably saw some of the classy cars as you're coming in. We haven't told the owners of those cars, but we're going to raffle off one. And so I'm sure they'll be fine. It'll be no big deal, whatever. But just kind of having some fun. So fathers, we appreciate you. We are so glad that you are here on Father's Day. You know, you could have said, you know, when your family said, hey, what do you want to do for Father's Day? You could have said, I want to sleep in. But you showed up to church today. That's awesome. That's great. So welcome. Hey, here's what we're doing today. Just kind of brings us up to speed. We are in week four of a series that we started 3 weeks ago, and we're calling it Dashboard Lights. And in case you haven't been here the last few weeks, why we're calling it Dashboard Lights is that oftentimes when we're driving a car, eventually some sort of light pops up on our dashboard. And sometimes we get it corrected right away. Sometimes we put duct tape over it and try to ignore it. But again, as we've been talking about the last few weeks, that if we ignore it, it will cost us more time and money in the long run. And what we're saying is that on the dashboard of our life, sometimes God has a light that shines up, kind of warning us about something, maybe something that could be a situation or a sin, and God doesn't want us to get close to that because it could hurt, it could bite us, and so God's just trying to warn us. And a lot of times when those little dashboard lights shine up, we ignore them, and we don't pay attention to them, kind of like something that happened last summer. If you've lived in Tri-Cities for at least a year, you'll probably remember this. Last summer, here in Tri-Cities, we had a whole lot of smoke around here. Does anybody remember that? Some of you are still coughing it up right now. But anyway, why we had smoke in Tri-Cities is because there was fires up in Canada, and then there was also fires in Northern California, and we were just kind of like right in the middle, so we got it from both ends. But I remember the fires in North California. I remember different times watching the news or watching it on an app or something about what's going on. And I remember some of the firemen were saying, we are seeing people, as the fire is bearing down on their homes, we are seeing people staying in their homes trying to fight the fire with a garden hose. And they're going, there's no way this fire is going to be fought with a garden hose. And then I remember another fireman saying something like this: those who heeded our warning to get out and left, lived. Those who didn't heed it and stayed, died. And then the one that I really, it's not funny, but it's just kind of sad, is that I remember one of them saying, we're telling people to leave because the fire's right on top of us. And they still think they have time to go back in and get their TV, right? Get their iPad, get their laptop, get their Roku, whatever it is. They think they got time to go and get these things. Now, you and I, right? You and I will probably remember seeing these or hearing some of these stories. And when we hear that, we're going, what is wrong with those idiots in Northern California? Why do they think they have more time? But can I just tell you, if we had a fire here, they'd be saying the same thing about you, about me, right? Because we oftentimes think when the warning goes off, we go, I got time. It'll be okay. Kind of like last week when we talked about, you know, when you're in a building somewhere and the fire alarm goes off, what do you do? Nothing. Huh, wonder what that is. I mean, right? You don't do anything. I mean, unfortunately, that's just the nature of the beast. When we have warnings, we sometimes do not heed them or do anything about them. And yet, this is what God is calling us, because when God gives us this dashboard of our life and he has this light blinking, he's doing that because, not because he's an angry judge, it's because he's a loving father. Because he's wanting to warn us ahead of time that this thing could hurt, this thing could be bad, and I don't want you to get close to it. I'm warning you ahead of time. But so often we don't heed the warning. Can I ask you, are you like those people in Northern California last year when the firemen are saying, get out, and they're going, oh, I got to go back and get my TV. Is there something in your life that you're not heeding the warning to? Maybe there's a hidden sin in your life that you're not paying attention to the flashing light on the dashboard of your life? Is there maybe an addiction you have? Is it maybe something in your marriage? Your marriage has gotten stale. It's not working right. It's kind of going the wrong direction. And yet you're going, oh, well, I'll get to it later. And what you don't know is that the winds of life is just spreading the fire quicker and quicker. And you're like, oh, I'll get to it later. And you just kind of don't heed the warning. Is there things going on in your life? Is there something where God's calling you to action, giving you a warning? And you know it because you've seen that light flashing on the dashboard of your life and you're just like, whatever, it's not that important, God. You're making a big deal out of it. But can I tell you that God doesn't make a big deal unless it is a big deal. God warns us. God helps us. And I want to talk today about somebody in the Bible that this is exactly what's going on in their life. The guy I'm going to look at is in the front half of the Bible, the Old Testament. His name is Eli. Eli, let me give you a little background with Eli. Eli was a priest for 40 years. He was a priest, and what he would do is he would be like a pastor of a church, but he was a priest of this whole area of the tabernacle, which is basically the church, we'd call it. And so he was doing this for like 40 years. And he had done a lot of priestly duties, a lot of different things. But he had two sons that were now adults, and they were like the assistant pastors. They were assistant priests. So it's kind of, you know, the nepotism thing. Well, I'm going to hire my boys, and they're going to be helping out here in the tabernacle, in the church, right? But let me tell you what was going on. There was things that were not right with his grown boys. And they were like, the assistant priests. And all of a sudden, we find out in verse 12 of 1 Samuel 2, it says this. Eli's sons were wicked men. They had no, say it with me, they had what? No regard for the Lord. So Eli, for 40 years, he's been the priest of this church, this tabernacle. And his boys were like the associate pastors, and they were evil. They had no regard for the Lord. What did they do? Well, let me tell you some of the things they did. They would steal from the offering. They would take money out of the offering for themselves. Scripture also tells us that they were sleeping with the women in the church. Woo! Wow, talk about scandal, huh? I mean, they were just doing sinful, wicked things. And these are like the priests. They're like the associate priests. They're working underneath their dad, who is the priest. If anybody should know the warning lights, if anybody should know the voice of God, it should be Eli, who is the priest. He oftentimes saw the dashboard lights for other people. He'd oftentimes hear the word from God for other people. But when it came to him, he didn't heed it. He didn't listen. He looked the other way. And tells us in verse 22. It says, by this time, Eli was very old. He kept getting reports on how his sons were ripping off the people and sleeping with the women who helped out at the sanctuary. In other words, what's happening is people are coming up to Eli. The priest goes, Eli, do you know what your boys are doing? Eli, do you know what your boys are? I mean, they're sleeping with women. They are stealing out of the offerings. They're doing all of these things. Eli, what are you going to do? And Eli doesn't do a whole lot. It tells us, even though he knows that the alarm is blaring, even though he knows that the light is blinking, it tells us in verse 20, 23 to 25, here's what he says. Eli took him to task. He talks to his sons. Eli goes, what's going on here? Why are you doing these things? I hear story after story of your corrupt and evil carrying on. Oh, my sons, this is not right. These are terrible reports. I'm getting stories spreading right and left among God's people. If you sin against another person, there's help, God's help. But listen to this. But if you sin against God, who's around to help? Whew, that's a good question. So basically, let me tell you what Eli does. Eli had known for years that this was going on. Eli had seen the blinking light, the warning sign. He had all the things going. He had people coming to him from the tabernacle, from the temple, going, do you know what your boys are doing? And he didn't do anything. And finally, what he does is give them a good talking to. Anybody remember the show? I don't think it's on anymore. It's been a few years since it's been off. But the show called Super Nanny. Anybody remember Super Nanny? All right, about three of us, okay. So, but Super Nanny would call Eli a threatening parent. All he did is talk to them. Hey, if you guys don't stop, I'm going to turn this car around. I'm warning you, next time you're going to be in trouble. Don't make me count to three. One, two, two and a half, two and three quarters, two and nine eighths. I mean, on and on and on. He was just threatening. That's all the boy did. All he did for his kids is just give them a good tongue lashing. Can I just remind you of something? He's not only their dad, he's their boss. He's the priest, they're the assistant priest. He could fire him, he could get him out of there, he could make him lose their income where they wouldn't be allowed to be able to sleep with the women or take out of the offering. But yet he didn't do any of that stuff. He just gave him a good talking to. Verse 25 says this, but his sons were far gone in disobedience and refused to listen to a thing their father said. Eli gave him a tongue lashing, and they didn't do a thing. It was so bad that God's going, I just can't take these kids anymore. If he, as the dad, Eli's not going to do anything, then God's going, I'm going to do something. And it goes on, it says this. So God shows up to Eli. God shows up to Eli, and God speaks to Eli and says this, why do you, Eli, why do you treat your sons better than me, God? Why do you treat your sons better than me, God? Turning them loose to get fat of the offerings and ignoring me. Verse 31, be well warned. Now I want you to hear what God is saying to Eli. Be well warned, Eli. It won't be long before I wipe out both your family and your future family. To which you hear, dun, dun, dun. I mean, right? I mean, it's just like scary all of a sudden, right? God is saying, Eli, if you don't turn from this, what's going to happen is I'm going to wipe out your current family and your future family. And Eli, whatever, doesn't do a thing. He's still, knowing that there's grave consequences, he still does nothing to his boys. Whew, man, that's tough. And then we go into an interesting part of the story. So I got to give you a little background on this next part of the story. So Eli, he's the priest of this tabernacle, this church. His two boys are the assistants. And there's this lady. This lady has been coming to the tabernacle for years praying because she could not bear a child. She could not have kids. And she kept coming all the time praying that God would allow her to be able to have a baby. And finally, God said yes. And she said, one of her last prayers is, God, if you give me a child, once I have the baby and I wean it, I will give it back to you. And so God allowed her to have a baby. She ended up having the baby about a year or so later when he was weaned off of the mother. She takes the kid. Now, this is a crazy story. She takes the kid and she brings him to the tabernacle or the church and gives him to Eli for Eli to raise to become a priest. Just a little guy, a little kid. She's bringing her child to the church, to the tabernacle for Eli to raise him in the way of God. Now, I'm going to tell you, let me pause a second. Some of you today, you have kids in the kids' ministry today. I'm telling you, when church is over today, you do not leave them here. We are not going to raise your kids in the church. We're not going to raise them for you. Go, woo, they're going to raise the kids for me. No, we're not. You pick up your kids, you take them home, right? But that's what happened back then. This is like this is Old Testament time. This isn't today. But yet here she is. She has the baby. When he's weaned off, she brings him to the church. And Eli raises him to become basically a priest. And what's interesting is, so this little boy, we don't know how old really he is at this point, but this little boy, at some point, it's nighttime, and God speaks to Samuel, this little boy. And God says to Samuel this, in verse 11 through 14 of chapter 3, God says to Samuel, listen carefully, Samuel, I'm getting ready to do something in Israel that is going to shake everybody up and get their attention. In other words, this is going to be a big thing, God's telling him. This is going to be a big deal for what's going to happen. And he goes on and says this, the time has come for me, God, the time has come for me to bring down on Eli's family everything I warned him of, every last word of it. I'm letting him know that the time's up. I'm bringing judgment on his family for good. He knew what was going on. Whew, listen to this. God is saying to Samuel about Eli, he knew what was going on, that his sons were desecrating God's name and God's place, and he did nothing to stop them. Whew. Can God say that to you, Mom, to you, Dad, about your kids? Is there sometimes a warning light that's shining? Is there something that's popping up that God's warning you about, and yet you aren't doing anything about your kids? You see, it's so easy to look at Eli and go, Eli, shame on you. Why aren't you doing anything? But could it possibly be God's got the same warning light on your dashboard going, what about you? You don't do anything with your kids. Well, you know, they're getting too old now. They're just going to have to raise themselves up. As long as they are under your roof, they're not too old. You can still parent them. It's a crazy notion, I get it. But this is something that God has called us to do. And God comes to this little boy, Samuel, and tells Samuel what he's about to do. Wow. And yet he still didn't do anything. Can I just tell you, listen, when God sounds the warning, when God turns the light on the dashboard of your life and warns you, God is warning you for this reason, because he wants you to know now. He wants you to have urgency now. He doesn't want you to wait and go, I'll get to it later. I'm just kind of busy right now. When things aren't so busy, then I'll get to that, God. I'll fix this thing that's going on, but it's just kind of busy. Can I just tell you, when is it not busy? Huh? I mean, it's busy now, and when this busyness goes away, guess what? This one comes right in. Busyness just always seems to be there, and we always have excuses. But yet God is calling us when he sounds the alarm, when he turns on the light of the dashboard of life. He's going, I am warning you because I want you to do something now. Not put it off, not do it later. God never talks about later. God is saying today is the day. Now is the time. Not later. Don't put it off. But yet somehow we always make excuses. We always kind of put it off. And God's going, I want you to have urgency. And let me tell you one of the reasons I think Eli didn't do anything. Eli actually was the priest for the last 40 years, for the last four decades. But he was also, at the same time, he was not only priest, but he was also judge. In that time, usually priest and judge was two different people. But for whatever reason, he felt like he could do both. So he was the priest and he was also the judge, which means he would do priestly duties. And then he would also judge over different things, the cases that people would bring to him. In other words, Eli was very busy. And because he was very busy, I don't think when he first started off 40 years before this, that he didn't mean to not parent his kids, but he just got busy doing two jobs that really two people should have done, not just him. And he got so busy that he just couldn't have time for his boys. And so what happened is his boys raised themselves. And they didn't do a very good job. And sometimes that's what happens to us. Sometimes we get so busy, we don't have time for what really matters. Is that you? Is there a light shining on the dashboard of your life that God is trying to get your attention? Could possibly be. So I want to really quickly, for the last few minutes of our time, I want to talk about three things, three responses that we usually have towards God's warning signs. How do we normally respond when he sounds the alarm or when the light starts blinking on our dashboard? How do we usually respond? Well, let me give you the first one. The first one is this, is we're oftentimes passive. Procrastination. We put it off. I'm going to procrastinate. I'm not going to do that. Let me tell you. Eli, priest, judge, doing both, didn't have time for his kids. Can I ask you a question? Do you, dad, do you, mom, do the same thing? When you come home at night, are you answering your phone during dinner? When the family's gathered, are you answering your phone during dinner? Are you sending text messages to work? Are you answering emails and stuff and doing all this? Are you putting out at home, when you're supposed to be at home with your family, are you putting out fires at work but you don't even realize that there's smoke in your own house? So often we get to the point to where we just simply procrastinate and kind of put it off and don't worry about it. I'll get to it later. I'm just too busy right now. I'm going to tell you, there has to be a point to where whatever is going on, and we're all busy at work and our jobs and all that kind of stuff, but there's got to be a point. When we come home, all of that stops. Guess what? Tomorrow morning when you go to work, it's all going to be there again. But when you're at home, you're with your family. You're with your kids, you're with your spouse. Some of you have been working the outage out at Hanford, and you've been working like 6 days a week for 12 hours a day, and you've been doing it for like the last 2 months. When you come home, I'm encouraging you, and I know it's almost done now, but when you come home, you're spending time with your family. You're not answering emails or different things. You got to spend time with your family. Your kids need you. Your spouse needs you. Your dog needs you. Your cat, who cares about that? But your dog, your family needs you, right? That's what we got to stop work and make sure we're parenting our kids, loving our spouse, doing what we need to do. In fact, let me ask you a question. How many of you have ever seen an episode of the TV show Hoarders? Anybody ever seen Hoarders? Okay, a few more of you have seen that. Okay, some of you probably were on it. I don't know, whatever. But anyway, but interesting. I love Hoarders because whenever I don't watch all the time, but whenever I do watch it, I feel better about myself. How about you, right? Woo, I'm not that bad. But anyway, what's interesting about almost every episode of Hoarders is about the same. What happens is that, you know, they show up and they show the house and they open the front door, and either the front door is just piled with junk that you can't even get in, or you have to climb over stuff, and there's like this little path into different rooms. But usually most of the Hoarders homes, it's just like just garbage and filth and junk all over. And in fact, it's sometimes like rotten food on the floor. Sometimes, you know, you see just mice and bugs and just nasty stuff like that. And usually every episode, they'll ask the homeowner, how did it get to this point? They go, I don't know how it got to this point. I do. Every day, you kept having more and more junk, bringing more and more stuff in, and you didn't get rid of anything. And then what's interesting is they usually all kind of say the same thing, just in different words. They say things like, something like this, like, well, I was going to get to it. When? When they condemned your house? When they take your kids? When? In other words, what they were doing, where they were procrastinating. Oh, I was going to get to it eventually. No, nobody in TV land believes you. It doesn't get that bad if you're going to do something about it. But yet, here's the thing. Sometimes we have the same thing. God is warning us about something, and we just kind of keep putting them off. We keep procrastinating. Your marriage is in trouble. Oh, I'll get to it. Your kids need help. Oh, I'll get to it. They can raise their... They're almost teenagers now. They can kind of figure this stuff out. And all of a sudden, we just come up with excuses after excuses after excuses. And God's going, quit putting it off. Don't procrastinate anymore. You need to do it now. Today is the day. You got to start right now. Let me give you the other way that we oftentimes answer God. Denial. When God shines the warning light, sometimes we deny it. We just deny it as if it didn't even happen. Eli was doing this with his sons. He had heard from God. He had heard from people in the church or the temple. And he just kind of kept denying it. Oh, it's not that big a deal. Come on, you're being over-exaggerating. Let me tell you what denial means. Denial is refusal to acknowledge the warning of God in your life. Let me say it again. Denial is the refusal to acknowledge the warning of God in your life. Is there something that you are denying? God is shining the light and you are denying it. Oh, it's not that big a deal. No, that's not a problem. No, my marriage is fine. I can still be married to my spouse and still contacting somebody that I used to go to college with. It's okay. Yeah, my spouse doesn't know about it, but it's not going to hurt anything. But you know better. But when you're in the situation, you don't. You think, oh, no, I can handle this. Your denial. This is when you have to hide something, that tells you there's a problem. And yet we deny oftentimes that we have a problem. Let me tell you, some of you, I get, probably not you, it's probably the people sitting next to you, but some of you get to the point to where you just don't know what to do. And so you just simply deny that you even have a problem at all. Let me tell you, this is why scams work. Now, I know you're too smart. You're not going to fall for scams. It's those people sitting next to you, right? They fall for scams, and here is why people fall for scams. Because they deny something. They hear this thing that they know is just over the top, better than my mind can even fathom. But yet, I am going to deny that, and I'm going to believe in this person. Because I want to lose 50 pounds in 2 days. And if you say that can happen, I'm going to believe you. Or the get-rich-quick scheme. You don't have to do anything, and all of a sudden, money's just going to somehow come to you. And all of a sudden, you're like, boy, that sounds too good to be true, but I'm going to believe you, right? Because it's denial. You know better. But that's how scams work. It doesn't seem to make sense, but you so want it to that you just kind of throw common sense out the window. And that's how scams happen. See, here's the thing. Some of us sometimes will say things like this. Well, you know, this is denial. Well, I guess I'll have to hit rock bottom before I change. And God's going, no, you don't. Do you see the warning light? Do you hear the warnings? Do you hear the firemen banging on the door saying, get out? You don't have to wait till you hit rock bottom. Let me tell you, if you do, God's there too. But God's also at the top. And God's going, you don't have to hit rock. Listen to the warning signs. Watch the light. Do something. Quit denying it. Admit you got an issue. Admit that you've got a problem. Quit denying it. And so often we don't. We just love to deny. Oh, we can see everybody else's problems. But when it comes to us, we oftentimes deny them. And then let me give you the third one. The other one is passive. Oftentimes we are passive. Let me give you a verse in chapter 3, verse 13. This is what happens with Eli. It said this, and Eli did nothing to stop them. Whew. In other words, you know what he was doing? He was being passive. Eli did nothing to stop his boys. He was absolutely passive. Can I tell you, are you, now I don't know, but let me just ask the question. You know the truth. Are you a passive parent like Eli? Are you like, oh, my kids are getting old enough. I've taught them all what I know back in kindergarten. I mean, they outgrew me from there. I mean, they're going to raise themselves, right? No, they're not. And if they do, they're not going to do a very good job. Are you a passive parent, mom or dad? Are you a passive parent? Is there something that you really know that you need to be talking to your kid about, but you just aren't? They'll figure it out. The internet will tell them. Good Lord, no. That's your job. The internet isn't their parent. And yet we sometimes are so passive in these things. Some of you are like in financial trouble, financial situation, and so you're passive whenever you get the mail. You get the mail and you're looking through, oh, here's coupons. Okay. Oh, that might be a bill. So I'm just going to kind of be passive and not even look at it. And let me tell you, by not looking at the bill, that's not going to help your finances. You know, you got to do something. You know, if the house is on fire, ignoring it doesn't mean the fire is going to go out. Your house will just keep burning quicker. You got to do something. Quit being passive. And then I love this next part. After God spoke to this little boy, Samuel, about what God was going to do to Eli, Samuel tells Eli what God said. And look at what Eli responds to Samuel, the boy, about what God told him. Eli says this, he is the Lord. Let him do what is good in his eyes. Now, I'm going to tell you, at first glance, that sounds spiritual. It is not spiritual. It is passive. Well, let God do what he wants to do, whatever's in his eyes. He is being passive at this time. You know what God has told both to Eli and then also to Samuel? If Eli doesn't change, I'm going to wipe out his current family and his future family. And here Eli is going, well, he's God. Let him do what he wants. And you know what? He was the priest, and he knew about this town named Nineveh. Nineveh was a famous town back then, and what happened was they were so wicked that God was going to blot them off the face of the earth. And when Nineveh found out about that, they all of a sudden just bowed down to God and asked for forgiveness and turned from their ways. And when they did, God relented and did not wipe them off the planet. And Eli knew that. And yet here he is going, well, let God do what he's going to do. If he's going to wipe out my family, my future family. And it sounds spiritual, but it is passive. You know what God really wanted him to do? God wanted him to fall on his face, admit that he had done wrong, ask God for forgiveness, and actually do something for his boys. But all Eli did was, well, God knows what's best. Let him do whatever he wants. How passive can you get? And then God speaks to him. And God speaks to Eli, and he says this in verse 29. He says, why do you honor your sons more than me? Eli, why do you honor your sons more than me? You know the wickedness they're doing. They're stealing out of the offerings. They're sleeping with. Why are you putting them above me? And can I ask you, is God maybe saying the same thing to you? Maybe in a dating relationship. Why are you honoring your boyfriend or your girlfriend more than me? Why are you honoring your addiction more than me? Why are you acknowledging or why are you honoring your lust more than me or your porn more than me or your addiction or my whatever, fill in the blank, whatever struggles you're going through? God's going, why are you honoring that more than me? See, God always tells us that he is a loving father, not an angry judge. He's a loving father. And because of that, he wants to be first in our life. But when we become second, third, 10th, 20th, 100th, God's going, ain't going to happen. And that's what God is calling out to Eli. Why are you honoring your sons who are wicked and you know they're doing wrong? Why are you honoring them more than me? And I believe God says the same thing to you and I. I want you to stop and think, what are you honoring more than God? Because whatever that thing is that's coming to your mind right now, that is the struggle and the problem that you have. And God wants you to deal with that. God's got the warning light flashing on the dashboard of your life. You see, here's the thing. It tells us this. It says, God has done for us what we could never do for ourselves. Sometimes we think it's too late. That's what Eli thought. Eli thought this in chapter 2, verse 22. Look what it says about him. It says this. By this time, Eli was very old. And honestly, I think that's why he didn't do anything. He's going, you know, I've been a priest and a judge for 40 years. And I'm going to tell you, I mean, you know, maybe 10 or 20 years ago, I could have done something, but the boys are too old. They're old enough and I'm getting too old. I can't do it. And so he used this as an excuse to not do anything. And sometimes you're done, well, you know, our marriage is gone over. You know, too much stuff has happened. I don't think we can fix it. I will just keep living as roommates, not as a married couple. Or we'll just get divorced. And God's going, no, it may be too late for you, but it's never too late for God. God can do anything when we fall on our face before him and we ask him for forgiveness and we ask him for his help. God can do it, even though we may not be able to. Let me give you one last thing for your notes. Here it is. If there are warning signs in your life, if there are warning signs in your life right now, listen, take action today. When God warns us, he's not saying, hey, do it tomorrow, do it later on. God always says, today is the day. Now is the time. For some of you, listen, for some of you maybe online, for some of you in this venue or the other venues, guess what? For some of you, today is the day for you to take action, to come to know Jesus Christ as Lord of your life and Savior of your soul. You've been feeling God tugging you. You know that God's pursuing you. But you keep putting it off. Oh, someday I'll do it when I get married or when I have kids or when I get older or just before I die. And God goes, forget all those things. Now is the time. Today is the day for you to come into relationship with God. Let's pray. So, Father, as we wrap up our time together today, God, you're an amazing God. And again, you are not an angry judge. You are a loving Father. And I'm so thankful for examples in Scripture like Eli and his boys. Lord, sometimes it's kind of like watching hoarders. We hear their story of Eli and his boys, and we feel better about ourselves because maybe we're not that bad. But, Father, there are still warning lights on the dashboard of our life. Maybe it's our marriage. Maybe it's an addiction. Maybe it is with our kids. But, Father, there's something that you are trying to get our attention, and, Lord, I pray that we would quit trying to procrastinate or be passive or deny it. May we acknowledge it and deal with it, because today is the day. Now is the time. We can't keep putting it off. So, Lord, would you help us to respond? May we fall on our face before you and confess that what we've done is wrong and that we are going to deal with it now with your help. Oh, we say thank you. And, Father, there's people right now under the sound of my voice, whether online or in venues right now. And as they pause and they examine themselves, they've felt that tug from you. Oh, they believe there's a God, but they have not chosen to accept this relationship from you. Jesus, you died and you paid the penalty for their sin. And they've heard that probably before, but they've never accepted what you did. And Father, today as they are hearing today is the day, now is the time. Some right now are taking this seriously. And they're bowing their heart and in their own way and in their own words, they're asking you, God, for forgiveness. And Jesus, they're accepting what you did when you took the place for them, when you died and rose again to pay for their sins. And Jesus, your word tells us that this is a prayer that instantaneously you answer when they ask for forgiveness and come into relationship with you and make you Lord of their life and Savior of their soul. That God, you instantaneously answer that. And I say thank you. And Lord, we thank you for that you love us, that you give us these warnings. Would you help us to heed the warnings? We ask this in your amazing name.